All right, call to order, Highlight Rural Fire District. Reminder to the public that meetings are being recorded. Is there any public comment on any matters not included in the agenda? Do I have anything to pull or a motion to approve our Highlight Consent Agenda?
Move to approve.
A second. I wasn't here.
JJ?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Ken?
Yeah.
Justin?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Captain promotion and pay.
We need lots of those.
Come on forward, Mr. Bob.
Learn your place.
Now you've turned so that. The lighting's better this side. This way.
It's almost good side.
Well, I do have the honor tonight of promoting Mr. Blum here into a well-needed position, as you all know, in the district. So he's getting his, he was officially promoted at training last Wednesday, so this will be just the beginning of his promotion to captain. And as a reminder, that the captain position is our incident commander position. So Nick has, I'll let you just let the board know, how long have you been with us?
I've been with Highlight for about 3.5 years. Joined in the spring of 2023.
So he went through our captain training process, survived shadowing of calls, and is ready to hit the road on his own. We'll get you your badge. I thought Jenny was here.
What if you want? No, she was in the kitchen. We just dragged her in.
Yeah. You stay here at the station?
What was that?
Do you stay at one of the stations?
I used to live at Sarno. I lived here for about 2.5 years. And then I'm a resident.
Volunteer Firefighter Association report.
We don't have a representative, so no report.
Ooh, getting closer.
Fire Rescue 1 article.
Hi, everyone.
How's it going?
Good. So, she approached me. I had an opportunity to write an article for Fire Rescue 1. I think most of you guys know my story as from maybe Bob, so I'll kind of just give like a quick little brief overview and then I'll read the article. It's only a few pages and then I'll kind of just like wrap it up. So I, for joining Highlight, I grew up in Red Lodge, Montana. I took an EMT class there my senior year, volunteered at Red Lodge Fire for a little bit. Someone came to both of me for school, someone said, oh, you have to join Highlight. So moved in the dorms and then 2 weeks later found myself at Cottonwood starting Recruit Academy. About 6 months later, moved into Sourdough. I was here at Sourdough for a year and a half, lived here, and then I moved to Cottonwood for 8 months or so before I got hired here full-time as ship captain. And I've been in that role for a little over 6 months now. I think looking back on it, when I first joined a little over 3 years ago, I didn't realize the impact that being not only a firefighter, but particularly a resident firefighter would have on me, not only as like a firefighter, but also as a leader. I got approached by Laramie County Fire Chief, his name's Jason Coy. They have a program similar to the one that Highlight has. they have residents and their residents attend school. He is an editor and writes for RSU1, and so he approached me and asked if I wanted to write an article kind of about my experience attending school, living at the fire station, going like from the dorms to living here in Sourdough, what that was like. And so looking back on it, I kind of wrote the article on my experience, but also my growth that I was able to have because of the people in this fire department. So. Growing leaders, the impact of resident firefighter programs. We do not develop firefighters, officers, and community leaders by waiting for them to be ready. We develop them by investing in them before they are. I don't feel ready for this. I remember thinking as our engine responded to a head-on collision on a cold winter morning. At 19 years old, I was serving as the acting officer and sitting in the front right seat of a fire engine with a crew of four other college students. The incident was near the station, and our command officer was over 20 minutes away. I knew that when we got on scene, I wouldn't be responsible for my crew, I would be responsible for managing the entire incident. As we drove, dispatch advised us that several people were injured. I thought about what I'd do when we arrived. I had practiced this exact scenario in training, and I'd watched experienced officers manage similar scenes, yet none of that completely removed the uncertainty I felt. When we arrived, there was no perfect plan waiting for me. There was only the responsibility and the expectation that I would step into it. Later that day, after the call was over and we were back at the station, I realized something important. You don't become ready and then step up. You step up, and that's how you become ready. Looking back, that lesson shaped my understanding of leadership more than any book ever could. Ironically, I was learning the same lesson in two different places at the same time, inside a business school classroom and inside a volunteer fire station. Two-way learning. When I arrived at Montana State University in Bozeman, I was looking for a community. I had just moved to a new town and wanted to find people who shared similar interests and values. That search led me to the Highlight Fire Department, where I became involved as a volunteer and resident firefighter, meaning I lived at the fire station. It wasn't just a place from which we responded to calls. It became my home and my second classroom. Some early fire life lessons came from emergency calls, but most of them came from training drills, late night conversations around the kitchen table, and simply observing experienced firefighters and officers interact. Living alongside people committed to serving their community created an environment where leadership lessons occurred every day, often without anyone realizing it. At the same time, I was studying business management. In class, we discussed leadership development, organizational culture, team dynamics, communication, and how successful organizations invest in their people. What made the experience unique was that the learning flowed in both directions. Business school gave me a framework for understanding leadership in organizations. The fire service gave me an opportunity to test those ideas in the real world. I could spend an afternoon discussing organizational culture in a classroom, and then spend the evening watching that culture influence everything from training expectations to how members supported one another after a difficult call. Likewise, experiences from the fire station often made classroom discussions more meaningful because I had already seen those concepts at work. When we discussed leadership, I wasn't picturing a hypothetical case study. I was thinking about people I knew and respected. The two environments continually reinforced one another, creating an education that neither could have provided on its own. Shortly after completing my Fire Officer 1 training, I was sitting in a college human resource class where we discussed the importance of setting clear expectations for employees. As I shared some of the approaches I had learned in my fire officer training, the teacher stopped and asked, "Where did you learn that? That is not in our textbook." The experience involved far more than simply balancing school and the fire station. There were weekends spent training all day, only to be woken up for a call after midnight that could be anything from a list assist to a working structure fire. Regardless of what happened the night before, the expectation remained the same. Be back in the classroom at 8 a.m. the next morning. The schedule was unpredictable, but needed to show up, stay engaged, and continue learning. The recruitment and retention impact. The reason I was sitting in the officer's seat that morning wasn't because I had all the answers or felt completely prepared. It was because leaders before me had invested in my development. They provided opportunities to learn, they trusted me with responsibility, and they allowed me to make mistakes and learn from them. Most importantly, they created an environment where growth was expected. I believe this is one of the most important lessons for volunteer and combination fire departments today. Many conversations about the future of volunteerism focus on recruitment. Recruitment is important, but retention often depends on something deeper. People stay where they feel connected and valued, and where they believe they are growing. Volunteerism is not automatically passed from one generation to the next. The ethic of volunteer service must be intentionally taught through mentorship, culture, and responsibility. Very few people walk into the fire service already understanding commitment, sacrifice, and service before self. Those values are developed over time. They are learned through experience and reinforced by leaders who take the time to invest in others. Empowering firefighters with early responsibilities not only foster leadership skills, but also addresses a critical issue, retention. Departments that trust and value their members create an environment where firefighters feel a sense of belonging. This investment in their growth can transform casual involvement into deep-rooted commitment. For college-age firefighters, the opportunity to take on meaningful roles can be the key factor that keeps them engaged and dedicated to their department. Departments that invest in people create future officers, future mentors, and future leaders. This reinforces something I believe many departments understand intuitively, but don't always articulate clearly. People stay committed to organizations that invest in them. Invest in people. Since graduating from Montana State University, I have worked as a fire captain paramedic in the same department I joined as a volunteer firefighter during my freshman year. That progression reflects the impact of leaders who chose to develop others, create opportunities for growth, and place trust in people before confidence had fully developed capability. The future of volunteerism depends on leaders who are willing to do the same. We do not develop firefighters, officers, and community leaders by waiting for them to be ready. We develop them by investing in them before they are. The lesson I learned sitting in the officer's seat that winter morning holds true. Readiness is often the response of result of responsibility, not the prerequisite for it. So, that's kind of my reflection of being in Highlight. And one thing I will say that I didn't necessarily write in this article is that you don't get that result. And obviously, I'm just one example. I think many other residents will tell you that they've experienced the same thing by being here, is you don't get that result by just having a fire station with 16 bedrooms. You get it by having a fire station with 16 bedrooms and a culture that genuinely supports the growth and the development of those people staying in those 16 bedrooms. And that's something that I've been lucky enough to experience here and continue to experience. And that doesn't happen without a staff, but also you guys who are willing to invest into the resident program. So I know I'm super thankful for the opportunities that were provided for me through this program. I think the people that live here and will live here will think the same thing. So thank you.
Awesome.
That was awesome.
You talked to Corey. Who runs a similar kind of system, only bigger. What did you learn about what our threats are going forward and what we should reinforce while we're here?
Yeah, I think there's a big benefit to having, like I wrote about being a resident and being in school. At Chief Coy's department, they are actually required to be in school. So all of their residents are either going through a fire sirens program or a paramedicine program. I'm not necessarily saying that that is what needs to happen here, but I think it is really cool when the department does support that, like education, which they do. But I think that could be a threat, is that if people feel like they are not supported, through like going through college. I don't think that necessarily is the case, but I think that's something that draws people to the resident program here. And he was saying like they support, financially they support their people going through school, and he was saying that if they didn't do that, they probably wouldn't have a resident program, which is kind of interesting. I think there's also benefit to, you know, having a mix here. Some people are in school, some people aren't in school. I think we're fortunate here to have the university to support us. So, like, recruitment, obviously we get a lot of people that come in, a lot of people that want to do this, but unlocking the people from the university to move in, I think, is a huge benefit.
Are we doing a decent job with getting the word out at the university? Four years later?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we are. You know, we see, like, I would say probably, and Chief, I don't know if this is, like, completely accurate, but I would say about, like, 50% of our residents attend school at Montana State.
Maybe, it's probably pretty close, then.
Maybe even a little bit more. And I would say, like, we're pretty average. Like, I think, like, when we intake new residents, I would say, like, a good amount of them come from the university, even if they don't move into the resident program necessarily, but they're still, like, volunteering. You know, they have other housing, they're living in the dorms or whatnot. So I think we're doing a good job. I think this last academy Miriam was in, I think there was, what, five or six of you guys who were 18, new to Bozeman, moved here. You know, finding Highlight is their community, their reason to stay. I'll say also, like, when I first moved here, I struggled a little bit, just like moving away from home, being in dorms, and if it weren't for Highlight, and weren't for going through the recruit class, I don't know if I would still be here, honestly. So I think it's cool too that the department is supporting younger, you know, fresh out moving out of home to join the department too. I think that's a strength of ours, and I think we have a culture and a community that supports that and really creates home for people. So I think that will continue to be one of our strengths.
I just wanted to add, too, that, I mean, Allie's a very humble individual, and we're very fortunate that she is continuing to stay with us, but for you guys' information, Fire Rescue 1 is a national fire publication, so it is it's on the kitchen table of fire stations all over the country, and I think it's a true honor that we have somebody on our department that got a publication in that magazine. But also, it gave us as more of the senior staff a chance, and I think Allie's article reinforced this for us and kind of gave us the opportunity to kind of revisit what we're doing. Because it can turn into a frustration that we are continuously training people to knowing that they'll be here for a couple of years and then move on. But it was a good kind of way to revisit the actual impact to those individuals. And at times we can kind of lose sight of that we are just locked into, you know, this person's gonna move away, let's start focusing on the next person. They're obviously, and I think Allie's article very well kind of put to it what the impacts of that, that our program have for those individuals.
Yeah, and I would also say, like, I've had discussions with other departments, other fire chiefs, like, outside of even Montana, and, like, this is rare. I mean, it seems like this model is rare. It's definitely very rare to the fire service of where, you know, you come in and, you know, within 3 years of being here, you're a captain and you're running instant command. I think, you know, the fire service tends to hold people back based on, like, you need a certain amount of years of experience to do this, and I think we challenge that norm. And I think sometimes, like Chief said, it can be frustrating, you know, because we don't have as many captains as we need, and, you know, maybe we're pushing people through the system too fast, but I disagree. I think it creates a lot of room for growth and for challenge, especially, like, for a young person to get that experience. Is not something that is very common, and that's happening in a lot of other places. So I would say we're unique in that in a very good way.
I just, my marketing brain's going about how, I mean, could we leverage this to help with further recruitment? I mean it was an awesome article. This is great exposure. I mean, she described exactly the value and the reason why we want people here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somehow we can use that. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but the wheels are spinning.
A YouTube video.
Something. I mean,
written on AI.
You know, get the local station to interview or do something too.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. We could. I don't know. Well, we could think about it, but.
But yeah, I think if we, like, I mean, obviously you guys support the resident program as a district, but I think it is just super important. But I think if we continue to do this model, continue to invest in it, and continue to get really good people through the door and get people to stay. I think we do write.
I'm curious, but both of you, how did you know, how did you hear about this? Like, when did you first get engaged about...
About highlighting? My dad's pretty heavily involved in the fire service. So I knew the Bozeman fire chief, and he said, oh, you have to come highlight. So it's a place to go.
How about you? Because you're...
Yeah, I just Googled volunteer fire opportunities, and highlight is one of the options for Bozeman. And then I also knew someone who used to be here, and so he kind of helped make that connection possible, too. So.
Awesome.
This is a weird hypothetical, but you're smart enough. If we were worse at providing opportunities in a good system and all the history here, but you still had cool people to hang out with, given those two, either a really strong, long-standing system or cool people to hang out with, which would have more weight?
I mean, I think it's dependent on individuals. I also think it's a balance. I mean, like, I know for myself, you know, like, I love being a part of an organization that has a lot of really great people, but if I feel like there's not opportunities to grow and to develop, I probably won't stay somewhere very long. You know, like, the good people might keep me here a little bit longer, but I think having opportunities and having reasons for growth, I think that is super important. I know that's probably not the same for everyone. You know, someone might say, oh, I'd much rather have, you know, 10 best friends, and I'm totally content with just doing, you know, what's asked of me. So you might get people like that to stay more.
So
I don't know if that answers your question.
It's not an easily answered question. I'm just trying to balance. So does Brian have to worry about slipping our bar soap in the shower one morning and being dead and leaving a spot for the fire chief?
I'm always working on my replacement.
Thanks, Sally.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor man.
Thank you, guys.
Let me look at your airway.
Final fiscal year 2027 budget.
So you guys have in your packet our final budget package. Cheryl can fill in any of the spots that I miss here. Essentially, so I'll kind of give you the rundown. The budget is the same. As we typically do. We are very fortunate to still run on the same track as the county came back and said we were sitting on too much money. So we roughly had $400,000 and change as a net income from last year, and obviously we did overspend the budget, so we had that amount, and then we underspent the budget last year by $434,000 roughly, which came up to a total basically that we were sitting on $900,000 that we needed to move. So as we do year to year, we just moved that into our capital apparatus fund to suffice what the county needs from us to be able to maintain that 33.3% of carryover of our budget. And that's pretty much it. I will say, you know, overall, I was hoping to see a little bit bigger of an increase. The budget, basically our income went up roughly about $100,000, which is nothing to complain about, but
yes, it is.
The amount of growth that I was hoping to see a little bit more reflection of that. And it's always kind of an unknown. I mean, we're roughly 2 years in the rears as far as when a house is built versus when it actually shows on the tax rolls. But we, since 2020, every year we've had just a continuation of a lot of building and growth going on in the fire district. And we just never have a good feeling of where the Department of Revenue is on actually getting that stuff up to date on the tax roll. But with that, I wanted to just kind of reinforce that we're just starting to squeeze just a little bit more as we go on. We're still in the black, and we're still in the black with the buffer. Obviously not as big as we've had before, but we're just still on that track of the amount that we're continuing to see in growth, we're outpacing in expenditure from either having to expand our staff and just the outrageous increase in cost that we're being hit with in the fire service of just about everything. Colin, Chris, and I just met today to talk about our fire hose replacement, and that just the cost of that has gone up. And I'm talking in the past 5 years, but has seen double-digit inflation increases on it. So.
And Bob, just for you, we are in the black, but we are running red in capital replacement over the time, so we shoved everything we could into there, and I don't think that, when do we go back red now on capital replacement?
I presented that a couple of
times. I did, yeah.
So, if you saw it, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. It was the first meeting I had. You had the projections of...
With this 900,000 move, it'll bring that fund without any of the current expenditures to like 2.2 million, and that actually puts it into the black, I believe, through 2034, but it all depends on inflation, of how much costs go up, but it just reverts itself after that point. That I mean, 5 years later, 2039, you know, it's showing a $6 million deficit. So if we can continue the track, which it's been my goal, is to try to save as much as we can in that budget. So we do have that amount that we can keep contributing to that to floating us along.
But, stupid question, but what's our fiscal year? Is it calendar year?
Nope, July 1st to June 30th.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, it's kind of goofy, right, that we are in fiscal year 27, so we're technically spending the money that we're approving tonight. It's just the way the taxing reporting is done in the county. We don't get the final numbers of what's going to be collected until August. And then we have to have cash carryover because we don't get any money received until November. So essentially we get two tax payments, one's in November and one's in April. The spring, April. So we have to have, even though our budget year starts July 1, we have to have the cash carryover to get us till we get that payment in November. Which we're very fortunate that, I mean, we have that type of coffers that we can carry that over.
Is that why it says estimated for 25, 26, or?
No, that should be fairly, well, is that still the numbers from preliminary?
No, for 25, 26, it was last year's.
Yeah.
And then where we're at, and then we just do our requests.
So we do actual versus what we originally estimated. Is that what that means?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. And then the next one is the next year. Okay. Got it.
And I was and Bob, if you'd like, the county budget forms, we have our own internal kind of budget that we do. And then Walt and Cheryl made this awesome spreadsheet where it just plugs numbers from our internal budget into the county budget form. Our county budget form is built a little more detailed than with this one. This is just...
I like simple. No, this is good.
What we're required to turn into the county.
Yeah.
Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
JJ?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
There is a resolution. I need two signatures, one on the actual resolution and then one on the budget.
Does it have to be signed by all of them?
Yeah, Pete's not here.
Does it have to be signed by him?
Yeah. You'll wait till Pete signs this thing?
Yes, yes. And that's just, well, Pete will be important to have that signature page.
Appointment of trustee to the Impact Fee Coalition of Gallatin County Fire District.
So this is a continuation of last month. As requested, I brought forward. So the authority under state law for impact fees is under Title 7, Chapter 6, Part 16. I did provide you the essentially the three sections or four sections of that MCA or that law that basically gives the authority of a fire district to implement impact fees. And then, as we talked about last month, that we have the authority to assess that, but we don't have the authority to oversee it. Basically, in state law, it has to be overseen by a municipality or a county government. So like the fire district, we can't implement our own impact fee that Gallatin County would have to implement it for us or on behalf of us. So I did include those laws for you, depending on how much you like to read legal jargon.
Questions?
I also, the summary, I just took the four parts of Section 16 and asked AI basically to give me a synopsis of that. Kind of those four areas, and I thought it actually did a pretty good job of kind of breaking it down. But that's what I have for you. I unfortunately don't have great information from the county on, I was hoping to talk with Gallatin Gateway Fire, since they're the ones who kind of are spearheading this, to see if this actually is gonna get some traction. But like we talked about last month, and this synopsis gives a pretty good readout of that it has to be spent on capital. It can't be spent for annual operating. It has to have a study done, so Gallatin County would have to run a study to basically show what the impacts are of new growth. To basically tie to then what the impact fees would be. That's kind of it. I don't know. It actually just recently came out. I don't know if anybody saw it. I will send it to you all. Missoula County just adopted a new impact fee structure, and it's actually, I was actually fairly surprised on what they're going to charge. They're looking at like $1,500 per single family unit under 2,500 square feet, over 2,500 square feet. If I'm going to remember this right, it's $2,500. And then commercials is going to pay $1,500 per 1,000 square feet of floor plan, essentially. So that just got adopted. It's pretty high in Missoula County. But that's what I have for you this month. I'm happy to continue to dig if there's more you would like to see. I guess that I was hoping to have something more direct from the county for you this month as far as if they're gonna actually seriously consider this. But I wasn't able to get that this month.
Okay, table it.
Yeah, if you'd like, if I can get a little more information from the county, I think that'll at least give us, again, I don't want to give you guys a project or ask somebody to be appointed to something that, you know, is just going to be a waste of time or that the county's not going to take seriously. Just kind of the scuttlebutt that I've heard, there is concern in the county of what the workload of this is going to be as far as... you know, how much employee time is it going to be required to, you know, assess new growth and apply this fee to it. And generally they would apply it countywide. So then figuring out, you know, what new growth exists in the Highlight Fire District versus Central Valley Fire District or Jackson Gateway Fire District or any of them. And then, you know, divvying that up to where it applies to.
Because it's a countywide set rate. Like if they do a rate or whatever, it's countywide, it's not by a district. So like
it can be. It just has to be overseen by the county. Historically, the impact fees we used to have were countywide, and then didn't matter what district the new growth existed in.
I didn't notice in there, but did it allow the counties to do an ICAP or a cost recovery for overseeing that?
I don't know for sure.
I don't remember either.
I can find out though.
That's the only way they could pull it off.
Yeah.
I'm still interested in being a part of it if we want to move forward, but you know, I'll take a look at this stuff.
Who did the study for Missoula, do you know?
I actually don't know. I don't know that it was published. I can try to see if Patrick or somebody would know through Missoula County that. But I don't think the news article said who did their study. I'll send you guys the news article though.
Is this a voter pass thing?
It doesn't have to be voter passed. It's just implemented by the county.
Yeah. Reed Fire Station.
So we don't have a lot to report. We did have a kickoff meeting with Liz Loomis and her team with our kind of, so Pete is sitting as a trustee representative. I'm sitting as the fire chief, chair of sheriff, sitting as admin, and then actually Allie Koontz is representative of the firefighters. And it was just a kind of kickoff meeting. There were some ideas tossed around of kind of the first phase of this is going to be how to market the fire district to make some awareness of who we are. So ideas kicked around about that. Unfortunately, Pete's not here, but there was some talk, you know, about posting signage along main kind of thoroughfare roads in the district.
There's a new idea.
It's been talked about before. I think we need to discuss it a little further before we take any action on it, obviously. Liz's idea is essentially to make like a mini billboard, like a 4x8 sign that wouldn't be able to go in the right of way, so we'd have to find private landowners who would allow us to put those signs on their property. So I think that could create some challenges of getting landowners to allow us to do that. But It's only one idea that's being kicked around. Is basically, so at least when people are you know, driving main thoroughfares like Cottonwood, South 19th, Gooch Hill, Blackwood, and they'll actually have a sign saying, you know, you're entering the Highlight Fire District. So we have a little more presence. But I mean, they were interested. So Allie, that's only one of two articles that she's written. She actually wrote one for a MSU publication that was really well done as well. So they're, I think, kind of interested to see what we can kind of, Bob, what you were saying is take advantage of the marketing of that to sell us a little more. The other thing I have to report on is Liz is going to do kind of a site visit on October 1st. To get a direct feeling of kind of the fire district, and I'll take her on a tour and kind of show her what our area looks like and kind of what the rest of the area or the rest of our surrounding area looks like, so she has that kind of direct correlation. We did get invited, so connecting to HOAs, on August 30th, the Green Hills Ranch has their annual picnic. They invite us every year, so I figured I would try to go and do some advertising there as well.
Nice. Fire chief report.
Let's scroll down here. fire chief's report.
He's going to buy a bouncy house in the shape of a fire station. And that's going to be just, then we're going to have to.
That'd be awesome.
Have fire trucks and stuff and just buy the fire station, bouncy house.
We ran 72 incidents in July. That August 1st brings us to 432. So we're pretty well on track kind of to be where we are, maybe a little busier than last year. Roster sitting at 43. With Nick's promotion tonight, we are at one of five needed volunteer captains. We still have five in the pipeline. Kind of still working on it. That number is, we just found out it's going to drop to four. One of them's leaving next month. And then we know in December we're losing another one. So that one's now going to, that number's going to, by the end of the year, be at three. But
so Nick is the only volunteer captain we have?
Currently, yeah. Sourdough's full with eight residents. Cottwood is full with four. And Ray is full with four as well. Non-resident shifts continue, training's going as normal. Obviously we're doing wildland fire training as we go through the kind of the season. Our accelerated foot recruit academy is actually started, but we're running three through it. It's kind of like I reported in the past, it's a little bit of a trial run to see if this will work as a way to get a few more people through the door. If it works well with these three, we may look at expanding it next year. If this turns out to be a complete disaster, we'll probably look at just changing it completely. Chris Leeper, recruitment retention, has been really busy. He's got Catapalooza coming up. I believe so far he is sitting on 19 applications, so that's really good going into the fall, and that's even ahead of Catapalooza. Which is pretty typical. Fall is our biggest recruitment time. He has, depending on if you guys have happened to any of these events, these testing some new waters of recruitment. We've had a booth at like Music on Main and the Stampede Rodeo as a way to kind of see if we can do any targeting outside of MSU. We'll see. It's kind of mixed results or mixed feeling of if that proved to be fruitful or not, but.
I know for sure one thing, that if you don't recruit, you don't get anybody from recruitment.
That's true.
But it is a pain.
Yeah. We helped Central Valley, July 4th with the structure fire, Fort Ellis with the structure fire July 10th, Bozeman with the structure fire on July 29th. The EMS, Headwaters EMS committee is still chugging along. I'll let JJ add anything if he wants to. We went through our kind of planning day meeting with our consultant and produced kind of some numbers. I think kind of a little bit of sticker shock. So we'll kind of see where this goes going forward. Chris and I are still sitting on the same committees as we have in the past. No, happy to report, no injuries in the month of July. All apparatus are currently in service. Colin has been very busy. It's summertime, which means it's just testing time. But we are now done with all of our pump, ladder, and hose testing. And that took Colin a lot of work. It's all contracted out, but it's just a lot of moving pieces that he has to manage. Happy to report that all of our trucks successfully passed pump testing, as they should, because most of them are new at this point. But didn't have any ladders fail, which is good. Hose testing, this is our second year of kind of officially doing hose testing. So we did have some hose bars fail, but not nearly like we saw last year. And again, that's kind of being built into our replacement plan per year to make sure our trucks aren't low on that. Last thing I wanted to just report on is two big kind of purchases we're going to be looking at. One, you guys already know, it's the fire pump for the Sourdough Fire Station that got ruined in a flooding issue we had in the vault. And I already kind of talked about we're getting water alarms and stuff installed in that vault to prevent that. But the new one we're looking at is one of our three. So this fire station has three HVAC units that heat and cool it. One of them, which services the residential rooms, so that kind of residential area of the fire station. I will say that that unit has been giving us problems for years. Going back to even Chief Rufisky's time here. And mainly its issue has been with heating, that it basically would, when the temperature got below zero, which is when you really need heat, the unit would essentially overheat and kick itself into a failure and shut down. And like residents were waking up in their bedrooms were like 55 degrees. And
because that's where they set the thermostat, because they're firefighters.
With the window open.
Yeah.
That's my favorite temperature.
And the only way, basically, the breaker has to be flipped to reset the unit. You know, we worked with the company that originally installed the HVAC in this building for years trying to get that fixed. And every little patch they try to do to it, every year we'd go into below zero and it would do it again.
Is that one of the $300,000 units or the $100,000 units?
Well, it's a $24,000 unit. But this summer, it actually started to fail to cool with air conditioning. And we brought in a new HVAC company to look at it, and they basically said that the unit is failing. That to try to fix it is essentially the same amount. I mean, not quite the $24,000, but a substantial cost to get it really healthy again, and they're recommendation, given that it's 12 years old, is that we look at just replacing it with a newer unit that's going to properly work. But it's a $24,000 fix. So I already kind of emails with Cheryl and Pete about going into this budget year. We do have money budget and contingency. Obviously, in our facilities, this would blow that budget right out of the gate, but with the money that we have in contingency, we'll kind of cover that these two big repairs that we need to do. So,
well, I wouldn't be comfortable using the same brand manufacturer of heat pump if they want to replace it 5 years out. You know, when it was failing for the first 5 years,
yeah,
I have a problem with that.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, working with that contractor, it's been pretty frustrating that. The amount of times that they've been out here and haven't been able to actually make a permanent fix on it.
Did the new company check the other units?
I don't know that they checked the other units. We certainly could have them do that. I mean, the other two seem to be working fine. It's just that one over the resident wing has always kind of been a problem child. That's what I have for you this month.
Okay. Any activities, announcements?
$11 million, 7 ambulances, 2 ALS chief's cars, 11 staffed ambulances. $8,400 for the average home a year. Fire service centric, obviously, concerned about cross staffing ambulances and fire trucks. Because when you're out on an ambulance call, someday, somewhere, somehow, there'll be a fire call at the same time and you won't be adequately staffed to go to the fire. I struggle with that argument, but that's just because I'm an old curmudgeon. But that's what it looks like to put 7 ambulances on. I think for this board, at the moment, I gotta agree, I'd certainly like a sustainable, consistent, countywide ambulance transport. And this is just transport, right? not first response, not education, anything. It's just to make sure we got seven AMOs and a medical director and supplies and that sort of stuff.
Seven meaning at all times?
Pretty much. Yeah.
What do we have now?
Oh, it depends on the day.
Yeah.
It depends on the minute. I've been on call this week, and I have noticed that there are several times when there's zero ammo available.
Zero?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's mainly considering the paid staff ambulances, so it doesn't necessarily account for ours.
Correct.
But it's AMR in Central Valleys and what the city fire department has available.
Anyway, so I can appreciate that, and in my first responder soul, I'm like, why we want to guarantee there's ambulance out there, because I don't want to sit at Indian Paintbrush for 2 hours with a sick infant waiting for transport. That wouldn't happen here, but it does in Gateway, it does in Fort Ellis, it does in Manhattan, it does in Three Forks, Clarkston, all that. Reasonable expectation. I think for this board, I really struggle to say, asking our constituents to support another $100 or whatever it is a year for a service that we're providing adequately and to better standard and with a lower response time than what this looks like. Now, what we probably could end up with that is to increase our career staffing here, because part of those, one of those ambulances programmed to be here. So we end up with paid ambulance people, which creates its own issues, mm-hmm. bringing people from the outside into our system, mm-hmm. unless they were our firefighters. So that's going to be an interesting point. To get through for Central Valley, Highlight, Big Sky, and West Yellowstone obviously have already bailed out, so we're providing that service adequately, our customers are happy, and we're going to keep going the way we're going, as opposed to add $11 million to the bill. And I am very curious to see how we want to land on that. I respect the shit out of the question, I don't know the answer on it. Long term, we need a transport system in this county, not necessarily in the Highlight Rural Fire District at mm-hmm. the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the securities that we provided for ourselves in this fire district outside of Central Valley, we've more or less ensured that we can get somebody to the hospital if we need to. I mean, a lot of districts don't have that they're relying solely on our private company here.
It wasn't that long ago we did.
Well, yeah, we wasn't that
charge
long
them extra, huh?
So we do transport now?
We do.
If we have to.
Well, we are transporting full-time basic life support. So if it's a basic life support call, we're actually not even paging AMR to those anymore, that we are just taking them. We're using AMR as a security blanket. If that we can't staff up an ambulance, which I will say I don't believe we've ever actually ran into, that we can fall back upon them. But we can do the same thing with Central Valley. Like, we can call them if we need to. We are now part-time transporting ALS. Couple of reasons. One, depends on if Mac, Allie, or Dahlhauser are working and not on command, that they will take call ALS. We haven't fully outfitted, basically mainly with medications to do full ALS. We kind of got some basic pain management and cardiac, but some of that stuff is incredibly expensive and expires after a year, in which time you just throw it out. So based on our volume, we haven't gone to that full level, but we're doing it part-time currently.
Those are all your paramedics?
Currently, yeah, those are the three. We do generally have a volunteer kick through the system every once in a while. We have some conditions with volunteers, with our medical director, which it's always worked out, but basically if they're a volunteer, they can't just solely volunteer for Highlight as a paramedic, that they have to basically work for AMR as well. And it's just to ensure that they have the proper volume to provide good care.
Right. 9:15, our next meeting.
Well, not sure I'll be back, but I hope so.
Everybody okay with that?
9:15.
Yep.
Everybody good? Meeting adjourned.